Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now on Last Call, the secret sauce for job growth, eye-opening new detail revealing the impact of the immigration surge. Taxi, Elon Musk out with a big new announcement on Tesla. We have got the breaking developments, raising the red flag. The man who called the dive in DJT now says another similar group of stocks could tumble. Herb is here with the names. Flying high, Boeing revealing its compensation for outgoing CEO Dave Calhoun. And ascending the throne, Caitlin Clark nearing the pinnacle of sports. And wait till you hear how much money may soon follow. Plus, out of this world, surge pricing. Eclipse travel costs are so insane, they may singe your corneas. But we're going to show you anyway. All that and more over the hour. So sit up or buckle up, because Last Call is up right now. Well, good evening here. Good afternoon out west. I'm Brian Sullivan. We got a, by the way, pretty big earthquake here. Actually, two on the East Coast today. We'll get more on that ahead. But first up on Last Call right now, growing concern over a possible escalation, maybe a big one, in the Middle East. A senior U.S. official telling CNN that the U.S. is currently on high alert and preparing for a, quote, significant and inevitable Iran attack in the region as soon as possible next week. They mean the Middle East, not here. Today, the head of Lebanon's Hezbollah calling the Israeli strike on Iran's consulate in Syria a, quote, turning point. Iran has already vowed retaliation for that attack. And Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is preparing to respond to any retaliation, saying, quote, whoever harms us or plans to harm us, we will harm them. The geopolitical unrest sending crude climbing, oil prices jumping over 4% this week, hitting their highest levels since last October. Gasoline prices also on the rise across America. And as people get nervous, and why wouldn't they be, gold getting a boost, settling at a new record. The serious question for the world and for all you investors out there, will tensions in the Middle East reach a boiling point maybe this weekend and push that region and maybe even America and Europe into a far broader conflict? Joining us tonight is retired four-star general and NBC News analyst Barry McCaffrey and Rapidan Energy Group President Bob McNally. General McCaffrey, thank you for joining us. And Bob, you as well. General, I'll start off with you. What should we expect from Iran, and what is the risk of significant regional escalation?
Yeah, well, clearly there's an inflection point in the war coming. The Iranians must respond in some way to the IDF's successful killing of seven of their senior Revolutionary Guard officers in Syria. So that is coming. The threats by Hezbollah are significant. That's over 120,000 fighters, 100,000 missiles that could overwhelm Iron Dome. And then finally, of course, Hamas is essentially winning the information war, particularly here in the United States. So it's a very serious situation. My guess is, at the end of the day, the Iranians do not want war, in particular with the United States, nor does Lebanon. So we should hope that there's an exchange of blows, but nothing escalates and goes catastrophic.
We talked,
which could happen.
General, we talked earlier this week, I think it was on Monday, about the chance and the chatter in D.C. that Israel could launch some kind of a ground movement into Lebanon to preempt any of the strike that you talked about. Talk to that as well, if you can, sir. But also, is there any scenario at which the United States or other Western powers in Europe would get directly involved in what's going on there?
Pretty unlikely. However, First of all, I don't think the Israeli Defense Forces are preparing to move in Lebanon. They have 60,000 troops, four divisions fighting in Gaza. Most of the mobilized forces have gone back to civilian status, back to work. There's essentially 20,000 some odd IDF fighting in Gaza. So there is one or more Israeli divisions on the northern border. They're not going to go in to Lebanon with an insufficient force, one would hope. So again, I think the danger is palpable. There's no question the Iranians could misjudge and strike U.S. forces. You know, if they went after the U.S. Navy in the Red Sea or in the Gulf, it could escalate into a U.S. response. But I don't think they want to have a fight with the IDF either. Israeli air power could be devastating in a relatively short period of time to their nuclear program, as an example. So my guess is there's going to be an exchange of combat attacks here, but it won't escalate out of control.
I want to go to you, Bob, because how much of a risk premia do you think, in terms of dollars, that there is in the price of crude oil right now?
Hi, Brian. $2, and we have 10 more to go. We think at least the market, and you and I have talked about this for a long time, has been complacent about Iran contagion risk. They haven't priced it in since early November, when Lebanese Hezbollah leader Nasrallah said, look, we're not opening a second front. Traders understand Hezbollah equals Iran, and that gets this thing to be a disruption risk. But this week, with the attack you've just been discussing by Israel on Iran, on its consulate, the market is beginning to price in disruption risk. I'll defer to the general on whether there'll be a major ground operation, but I don't see those 100,000 Israelis going back to their homes in the north until they figured out a way to secure the north. And I think there's a reckoning coming with Lebanese Hezbollah and Israel, in addition to the near term, when we have to see how will Iran respond to the Israeli attack. So I think in short, Brian, the market has some more risk pricing to do here.
There's a variety of scenarios, and I hate talking about war like this in terms of numbers, but that's kind of what we have to do here, Bob. There's a couple of different possibilities. One of them is that Iran tries to strike in Israel, and hopefully the Iron Dome will hold up if that is the case. Israel, not a fossil fuel producer. So I would imagine in that scenario, we probably wouldn't have much of a movement. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the other scenario would be going after more Western shipping and oil assets in places like the Persian Gulf or the Red Sea. If we saw something like that escalate from Iran, what would the price of oil do?
Well, if anything caused the market to be concerned about the oil and LNG that is produced in and flows out of the Arabian Gulf, and we're talking about 20% of traded LNG, 25% of seaborne traded oil, 16 million barrels a day of crude, 50 million barrels a day of crude, 6 million barrels a day of products. If the market, for any reason, comes to think that that's being disrupted, in my view, that's a heart attack. That's a $40 delta on crude. We have a rapid and a 30% probability on that. We've had that for a long time. The market's now at maybe 5%. It's starting to price it in. So it's a showstopper. If the market, for any reason, starts to think that this war will expand to include that theater and the energy flows from that region.
General, we also, of course, have Ukraine pushing back against Putin, fighting back. Good for them, attacking oil assets inside of Russia, going after refineries. That actually could probably bring the price of oil down, because then you don't have a place to refine it. You've got more oil there. They've got to sell it somewhere else. But, you know, when I look at the world, I see this raging war in Ukraine pushing back. I see Iran now threatening to attack Israel. Israel's in Gaza. Israel and Lebanon may soon have some sort of serious conflict. Israel's attacking the Iranian embassy in Syria. And I just wonder, in just 2 years, how did we get here?
Well, you know, you're right. There's always an argument that this looks more like 1914 and the opening moves of World War I than than the current situation has ever been. Taiwan is clearly a linked asset. Does President Xi follow the U.S. inability to support Ukraine and their criminal Putin invasion of a foreign sovereign country? Does NATO come together? And Macron's now talking about putting French or NATO forces into Ukraine. We have the election coming. Will Trump withdraw from NATO and neutralize all of our alliances? So there's just an awful lot of political insecurity built behind these defensive military alliances, never mind this terrible war in which Israel is trying to neutralize Hamas after their brutal 7 October attack. So it's complex. It's dangerous. I see a lot of moderation by the political leaders who will not gain from all-out war in the Middle East.
Let's hope cooler heads prevail. I'm well-read enough to know that history says that peace is more rare than war, but we certainly hope that things de-escalate from here. Bob and General McCaffrey, thank you both very much, guys. Have a good weekend. All right, on deck, Boeing revealing the latest compensation numbers for its outgoing CEO, and they're not small. We have them. Plus, stunning new data on the real fuel for America's job growth. Stick around.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right, let's get to tomorrow's news tonight. We've got some big news in the airline industry. First up, Boeing releasing CEO David Calhoun's total compensation for the last year. And he took home a whopping $32 million. That's up from $22 million for the prior period. In other words, he got $10 million more. The current stock slide, though, for the company could ultimately lower that number, as most of that was in stock. Calhoun has said he will step down at the end of the year following a number of high-profile incidents involving Boeing planes. Shares of Boeing down a little bit right now. Next up, major news for United Airlines, the company calling off its investor meeting after a number of safety incidents involving its planes. A meeting was scheduled for early May. You remember that the tire that fell off one of the airline's jets, as well as video of fire coming out of a United engine or sliding off a runway in Houston? Well, shares of United are on the move a little bit after hours right now. In the meantime, today's jobs number coming in way, way better than expected. The U.S. adding over 300,000 jobs during March, with the unemployment rate edging lower to 3.8%. But according to a new note from Goldman Sachs, they highlight that with a higher influx of immigration, both legal and illegal, it is actually helping propel the jobs number higher, specifically in things like leisure and construction. So just how much is all types of immigration impacting these big jobs numbers that we have seen the last couple of years? Joining us now is economic analyst and columnist at the American Enterprise Institute and CBC contributor Jimmy Pethakoukas. And Jimmy, it's a politically sensitive issue. I get it. So let's just stick to the facts and the data. And people don't realize this, but the reality is that companies self-report. They don't have to report status. Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and others effectively coming out and saying that what's happening at the border, that undocumented migration, a lot, whatever you want to call it, that is directly impacting the jobs numbers.
Yeah, in a good way. I mean, so much of what we've seen with immigration are problems at the border. It looks like chaos. People are really concerned. People don't like disorder, and they don't like what looks like the government's not doing its job. But now we're seeing that this influx of labor supply is helping us meet demand in a way that we can have lots of job growth. It's good for the economy, but in a way that doesn't create lots of inflation. So that, along with faster productivity growth, are two sort of supply side aspects to this expansion, which are really surprisingly strong.
Yeah. So I mean, again, and people, I've been posting about it all day, and there's been a lot of great questions. Got great followers and great smart viewers here, best in the business, and they'll say, "Well, wait a minute. No. How could somebody that's undocumented be included in the federal numbers? They don't have a Social Security number. They can't work. They are." Because if you look up the BLS's definition of a foreign-born worker, it could include H-1B visas. It could include people that are coming over for university and getting jobs. But the BLS itself notes that undocumented migrants are also included because companies self-report, and they are not required, I don't think, to have to report the status. So they could hire 50 people and just say, "We hired 50 people," and we don't have to know which people they are hiring. That's how it works. That's why it's possible.
Listen to the point sort of you're making there, that people are coming to this country, whether they're documented and undocumented. And for all the concern that people are coming here just to get on welfare or something, people are coming here and they are finding work and they are being counted in the jobs numbers. What that tells me is that we have a lot of demand and we are not providing enough supply, meaning supply of opportunity to come in this country. And this country could actually be absorbing a lot more immigrants than we are currently. I mean, I think this data points to that strongly.
Yeah, the CBO, Morgan Stanley's note 2 days ago, the CBO had noted they estimated, Congressional Budget Office, about a 1 million jump in population last year and this year. That number, so that's 2 million, that number has been upgraded to 6.6 million. So it went from 2 million to 6.6. And Morgan Stanley and their excellent economic team directly noted that jump in immigration expectations as being responsible for a lot of these added jobs and expected job growth in the future. And legal immigration is nowhere near that. So it's very easy to draw the conclusion. I think your point is well taken. You do wonder, though, if you're trying to sell this story as the president, right? The border crisis was kind of ignored. Now it's being ignored and blame is being passed around. Do you ever lean into it and just say, "Yeah, and look what it's doing to our job market"?
I think you should point out the facts and dispel the myths. And the fact is, the American economy is the best in the world. People want to come here to work. And some of those people will be doing jobs in leisure and construction. Other people will come for the more sort of high skill tech jobs. We need all those people. Listen, the whole world over the next few decades is going to be scrambling for immigrants.
I think we agree. I'm not disagreeing with your point. But then I look at the fact that we issue 85,000 H-1B visas, including new students. 85,000 a year, okay? Millions of people apply. It's like winning the Powerball. They get to come here. They get to move here. Why don't we raise that number? Why don't we say to everybody around the world, "You're welcome here, okay? We're going to open up our systems, do it legally, know who you are, where you're going to go." That's it, to make sure that everybody is taken care of. Why are we not raising the H-1B visa, which every freaking tech company in America would beg the government to do?
Because people can win votes and win elections by saying that immigrants take jobs. We have too many immigrants. We need to limit it. It's the same arguments made about trade, when in fact, immigration is like the secret sauce to the American economy. And we're going to need a lot. Like I was trying to say, there's going to be a global scramble for immigrants in coming decades as fertility rates are dropping faster than most countries, most governments think they are. Yeah. And we have this ability. We should be exploiting it, as you just said.
There you go. I know it's politically sensitive, but there's no question it is benefiting the job market and probably American growth and GDP in many ways. Jimmy Pethakoukas, thank you very much. All right, coming up, is this Tesla's turnaround moment? Elon Musk kind of shocking everybody with a major announcement today. Phil LeBeau with it coming up. Plus, he is the man who called the dive in DJT, and now Mr. Herb Greenberg says, another group of stocks is poised to slump.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Lucky you. Time for a bonus Tomorrow's News Tonight with two big stories involving a guy named Elon Musk. The first on artificial intelligence and his startup xAI. The Wall Street Journal reporting investors close to Musk are in talks to help the company raise $3 billion. That would give the valuation of $18 billion. And the company was only launched in July of last year. Here's a bigger story. Elon Musk sharing himself on X that Tesla will unveil its long-awaited robo-taxi on August 8th. The news sending shares of Tesla up after hours. Phil LeBeau joining us on the phone on this breaking story. Phil.
You know, Brian, when you look at this, this is one of those that's going to have more speculation than anything because he didn't get much from Elon Musk today except for one post on X late this afternoon. It said robo-taxi unveil on 8-8, August 8th. All right, so what does that mean? Well, a lot of questions here. First of all, what are we talking about in terms of entry into service? Where will the location of the robo-taxi be? Certainly not going to be widespread. It'll probably be in one specific area, maybe a geo-fenced area. What's the level of autonomy? Remember, full self-driving is not full self-driving. It's nowhere close to it. And has the technology evolved to the point where it could be? And where's the vehicle going to be manufactured? So as you look at this, this all sets up the question that will come when Tesla reports its Q1 results on April 23rd. A lot of questions will be about the robo-taxi because, Brian, at the end of the day, on paper, the robo-taxi or any autonomous taxi service makes complete sense. You strip out the driver, you lower the cost. Fantastic. Here's the problem. We are nowhere close to having the level of autonomy widespread where this can take off. Now, has he cracked the code? We'll find out in the months to come.
Well, they're offering up, I think, what is a month of free full self-driving, what they call FSD?
Well, yes, but remember, it's not full self-driving, Brian. It's level 2, level 3 autonomy. You still need to pay attention. Are there parts of a drive where you can take your hands off the wheel and the vehicle will control itself if it's a Tesla with full self-driving? Absolutely. Is it going to take you from point A to point B wherever you are and you don't have to touch that steering wheel? Not a chance. They're not at that level of technology yet.
Phil LeBeau joining us by phone on a pretty big breaking story. Phil, thank you very much. All right, joining us now is Tesla investor and Deepwater Asset Management managing partner Gene Munster. Gene, we're going to bring you on to talk about kind of something different. Maybe we'll get to it. But I got to ask you, robo-taxis, everyone's been waiting. Is this a big deal?
Brian, it is a big deal, and I think that it's an important context to the investor. Phil framed it in well in terms of what the potential impact is, just higher margin. Before I do that, I want to just mention this is probably coming at the cost of them not pursuing the cheaper Model 2 $25,000 vehicle that was on the table. They've talked about that. That probably is now on pause, and all of the focus is on robo-taxi. I suspect the reason why they've made that change here recently is they have more confidence in some of that beta that you were just talking about. The response so far, including our own Andrew Murphy from Deepwater, who's been following this, uses this technology, has been that this is a step function improvement. So we're getting much closer. But I want to put some quick numbers on, Brian, why this is such a big deal, why this is a win for Tesla investors. And it will take a long time to get there, 3, 4, 5 years. Mm-hmm. But to put in perspective, if they do 1 million robo-taxis, that's a number that Elon talked about in 2019, 1 million robo-taxis, and those robo-taxis earn $250 a day each, and they take a 15% take rate on that, that adds $10 billion to the operating line, the net income line. That is basically double what their current net income is. Again, it'll take a long time to get there, but if you just think about the levers and about shifting this company in a whole different direction back to the growth topic, this has the potential to do that.
Yeah, big story. Long wait. We'll see what really comes out on the 8th, but I know investors are excited. You're excited. And if you're excited, I'm excited. Gene Munster, excited for the weekend. Have a great time. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, meantime, Trump Media, the social media stock, plummeting another 12% today. Over the last week, it is down more than 34%. Remember, the stock just debuted via a SPAC merger last Tuesday. So let's go back in time, like to last week, the day that Trump Media, DJT, made its debut on the NASDAQ, and to what your next guest had to say about it on this very program.
This is the most overhyped meme stock since the meme stock mania. In any other universe, in any other world, with any other sort of name or person associated with it, this would be a penny stock. And that is not, you know, that's not a good thing to say.
Herb Greenberg joining us now, CNBC contributor, author of the Substack newsletter, Herb on the Street. Don't you love it when we bring you on, Herb, because you were right? Like, you know, if you were wrong and we brought you on, you'd probably be mad. But we just gave you a shout out.
It's always nice. Well, it's not a penny stock yet. And so, but it's on, it looks like it's on its way to go lower. But who knows, between here and there, it can go much higher.
Yeah, and good point, because we don't know who's buying this thing. The president, former president, very polarizing guy. Some people hate him. Some people love him. So this is kind of a stock that could swing with a lot of different winds, I would imagine.
It could, but as everybody has said from me on to everyone or anybody, is based on fundamentals, this stock doesn't deserve to be anything but ultimately the penny stock that many of us think it ultimately will be. Some people say it's a stock that's going to either go to zero or it will end up being state TV. Depends on your perspective.
I think somebody once said deserve ain't got nothing to do with it. Can't remember where that was. Herb, let's talk about another group of stocks that you kind of, in your newsletter, put up the red flag on. And these are a lot of the solar stocks. I talk about energy a lot. I get it. Everybody's been kind of waiting for these sun runs, the solar edges, the end phases. A lot of money going at them with the Inflation Reduction Act. A lot of optimism about renewable energy. But, man, they're just not performing.
Yeah, look, SolarEdge is down around 60% since I first red flagged it. Subsequently, it had serious inventory issues in Europe. There's tremendous competition coming its way. Enphase faces similar issues, but for some reason it's been the company people have wanted to bet on. But the stock now is down 10%. Their chief commercial officer is saying he's leaving the company. And one thing I pointed out in my most recent piece on solar stocks, I called it Solar Storm, is even at these levels, these stocks remain vulnerable because the spoiler in the party of all people, of all companies, may ultimately be Tesla, at least right now, at least as it applies to California, at least as it applies to pricing of batteries, which is an important part of the equation with any solar system installed today in California. Tesla's come in finally with something they call the Powerwall 3. It's been what people have been waiting for forever. And in full installation, some of my team has looked at this and the pricing has been, say, up to 30% below, say, an Enphase system. That raises the question, ultimately, will there be price wars in this? Will Enphase have to lower its prices? And will its 22% operating margins be at risk? And that would be a shock to its profitability. So I think this is one you need to keep watching. And again, we often say, even though stocks fall a big amount, doesn't mean they can't tumble again.
Well, you live in California. They changed their net metering rules. The amount of money that people might be able to get back or put back into the system, it's like they want everybody to use renewable energy, and then they make it harder and more expensive to do that. But, I mean, that may be, Herb, the most California thing ever.
Well, look, I have an Enphase system on my house today. If I put something on today and bid it out, maybe it wouldn't have been that system.
Yeah, might be the case. But either way, Mr. Herb Greenberg with the call on DJT last week. So far, proving prescient, but we would expect nothing else from you, my friend. Thank you very much, Herb. All right, coming up, two fascinating to us market developments that you may be overlooking. Apparently, it's going to be called Sully's Stock Stats or something, and it's next. Plus, seismic moments, what many may be missing from today's Northeast earthquakes. That's right. Plural. Stay with us. It was was the day that shook the world, or more accurately, shook a big chunk of New Jersey in the Mid-Atlantic region. This morning, we had a magnitude 4.8 earthquake that hit in New Jersey. It was felt from Philly all the way to Boston. And just within the last hour, we had an aftershock also located in sort of northwest New Jersey. You're looking at live pictures right now of Manhattan. Now, New Yorkers who've been dealing with a lot in the last 20 years, not accustomed to earthquakes. Thankfully, no reports of any damage or injuries. Some of it, though, was caught on camera. The Holland Tunnel in New York was briefly closed, and inspection for airports and flights were diverted to check out the runway. And while it may seem that earthquakes in New Jersey and New York are rare, and they are, they're actually a little more common than you might think because of geology. Over the past 200 plus years, more than 170 quakes have hit New Jersey. The biggest one was all the way back in 1783. They estimate that to be around a magnitude 5.3. I mean, it's an estimation. It hit in the very northern part of the state. New York got rocked by a big quake back in 1884 that was felt as far north as Vermont. How come? I didn't know, so I looked it up. Well, our region sits on a pretty major fault line. It's called the Ramapo Fault. Most of it's in New Jersey. It's a major crack in the Earth's crust, and it is the longest such fault line in the Northeast. And while it is much less common to have quakes here than it is in the more well-known San Andreas Fault of California, this is pretty random but interesting. The earthquakes here on the East Coast are felt farther, even if they are smaller than the ones out West. It's because, again, I learned this today, our sedimentary rocks are colder, which sends the seismic energy over a greater distance than the warmer rocks of the West Coast. Not pretending to be smart. I had no idea before today either, folks. But random but interesting. All right. Oh, my God. That's a new animal. That's fantastic. Although I think I'm thinner than that now. Anyway, time to roll out a new feature here on Last Call. We're going to call it Sully's Stats, stuff that I just kind of look in my fact set and I find fascinating, things that are going to be going on in the market for either good or bad reasons. And joining us now to debut it is our friend, CIC Wealth Management Executive and CBC Contributor, Malcolm Etheridge. We've got to make you a snazzy animation like that, Malcolm. Thanks very much for joining us. All right, I want to start with one that is very good for investors in ExxonMobil. Today, ExxonMobil hit an all-time high going back to 1920, dollar adjusted. It broke above 120 a share. It's kind of an amazing run out of the 33 bucks for the pandemic bottom. Listen, if anyone had the stomach to buy and hold Exxon, you made a lot of money. It comes on record oil production and near record or record profits for many big oil companies. Analyst Malcolm, still a little bit bullish. They got a price target of 125 bucks a share. Exxon, obviously, with climate change, a controversial stock. Some people refuse to own it. What is your take on ExxonMobil?
Yeah, I actually think Exxon is an interesting name here, especially for anybody who believes in this broadening trade we've been talking about, right? Rotating away from the Mag 7 or Fab 4 or whatever new name we come up with after another stock gets dropped. But I think, you know, this sector is underowned in comparison to things like tech or healthcare. And so it certainly makes sense that you'd want to grab the biggest, best name in the energy sector, which would be an ExxonMobil.
Yeah, I mean, quite the run, and pretty quietly, by the way, too. I know because, listen, energy stocks are unloved. Some people say they're underowned. They're a much smaller part of the S&P, but a big run there for ExxonMobil. Are there any others in oil and gas, Malcolm, that you are interested in? We highlighted Exxon because of that all-time record high.
Yeah, I actually think if I'm not going to own Exxon, I would own the index itself. And I say that because there's a bit of a constructive setup happening underneath the surface in energy in general, right? So you think about the fact that we're going into the bigger travel months for the summer. You talked earlier in the show about the geopolitical issues that are likely to affect the energy sector. And you know, well, it doesn't take very much of a run-up in the price of oil for companies like an ExxonMobil to do well. And so I think maybe you just own the sector broadly rather than trying to pick, you know, the best three or five.
The second stock that stuck out to me kind of similar is copper miner Freeport MacMoran, Malcolm, up 33% in 1 month. Copper prices up. Apparently taking stuff out of the ground is profitable right now.
Yeah, I'm actually shocked by Freeport just as much as you are, right? It got whacked pretty hard along with everything else back in 2022, it being copper. And then all of a sudden here in the first quarter of the year, Freeport has actually been on a pretty significant run. Copper itself has actually been up, keeping pace with the broader market. But Freeport has actually been up about double that over that time period, which is interesting. And so if it can hold this price of about $4 a pound or better, I think the year looks pretty solid for a name like Freeport or, you know, again, copper futures in general.
But it's been crazy. A couple years ago, you look at climate change, you look at renewables, you would have said, you know what, maybe less Freeport, but Exxon, it's dead. And now look, all it's doing is making money. I feel like there's some kind of a lesson here.
Well, one of the things that actually benefits Freeport, too, in comparison to all the other mining stocks is that they have a very heavy concentration in copper, right? A lot of times your miners will want to own some of all of the precious metals.
Yeah.
We've talked ad nauseum about gold, right? That's the more popular one. But Freeport, decided to be long copper and only focus there. And that's what's been there.
Oil and copper, the themes of 24 so far. Malcolm Etheridge, have a great weekend. Thank you very much. Coming up, new figures around Caitlin Clark. You got to see. And welcome back. We are less than 2 hours away from one of the most anticipated games of the year in any sport. Iowa superstar Caitlin Clark taking on the UConn Huskies in the Final Four later tonight. Ticket prices for the game, they're through the roof. The average price for women's Final Four is about $1,400. For context, that's nearly three times the average ticket price for the Knicks-Bulls game tonight. Caitlin Clark is cashing in on her superstardom. She has signed big endorsement deals with the likes of Nike, Gatorade, State Farm, and Buick. And according to On3.com, her name, image, and likeness deals are worth more than $3 million. That makes her one of the highest paid college athletes in America. So just how big can Caitlin Clark be as she goes pro? Let us ask Mark Douglas. He is the CEO of Mountain, which tracks digital TV ad spend. All right, Mark, you're the marketing guru. If you could sit Caitlin Clark down or her reps or anybody and say, here's the one piece of advice I'd give you, what is it?
Well, it's keep winning. That's the number one piece of advice. But I think also what you're seeing is that people just love a great sports story. Not only do the fans love it, but advertisers love it. Big brands love it, and everyone wants to be a part of it. And she's making it very easy for them, both on the court and obviously off the court also, in terms of how people are responding to it. So it's just don't change, more of that, and, you know, kind of bring the WNBA, college basketball now, and eventually WNBA into more homes and create more fans. It's just going to be worth a phenomenal amount of money for her and the brands that attach themselves to
winning it. Matters. So listen, UConn's a good team. They still got another game even if they win tonight. Does it matter from a money perspective? I mean, it matters from history and tradition and just emotion if you win. But from a money perspective for Caitlin Clark herself, does it matter if they win the title?
I don't think at this point it does. I mean, you want that fairy tale ending, but I think at this point a lot of momentum has been created. You stated in terms of ticket prices, although I was going to say I think all games should cost more than the next game. I grew up in New York City, been disappointed for a long part of my life, yeah. But the momentum is there, and I don't think, you know, whether they win tonight's game or not is in any way going to change that. If anything, it might, if they didn't win, and obviously you want to go out there and win, it might just create even more interest at the beginning of next season see how this fully plays out.
Not sure that the Knicks-Bulls would be the right reference. I think, by the way, the Pistons and the Wizards, there were seats available for like $7. So let's just move on. Caitlin Clark, maybe a once-in-a-generation type of a talent. What about for the rest of women's college basketball? What about for the WNBA? You have any advice from the broader perspective? Because now they've got this super marketable superstar in the very new age. And by the way, there's been plenty of superstars in the past. We just didn't have the NIL. We didn't have these college deals. They didn't exist.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the question is whether what she's accomplishing inspires other young female players who might not have looked at the WNBA as a rally financially or anything like that to now be inspired to pursue it. Kind of like a Tiger Woods moment in golf when he first broke onto the scene. I think there's a possibility of that. So there could be something longer term here that's bigger than just her. And I think that would be really exciting for basketball as a whole, and certainly for women's, for female basketball.
Yeah, amazing there. State Farm's really shelling out for the superstars. Hopefully they'll shell out for the claims as well. Mark Douglas, thank you very much. Appreciate it, Mark, as always. All right, let's get now to our quicker than the ticker, all the best of the rest of the headlines.
Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. Apple laying off more than 600 workers in California. The company's decision to end its next-generation screen project, an electric car initiative, reportedly behind the cuts. Newport, Rhode Island, the hottest second-home luxury market for the super wealthy. The county saw a 64% jump in seasonal home sales with a price of $1 million-plus, that according to the New York Times. Bronny James, the son of LeBron James, declaring he is entering the 2024 NBA draft in June. He played college ball at USC and will also enter the NCAA transfer portal if he decides to remain in college. Ouch! Alexis Jeunard fell during the inauguration of the Paris Aquatic Center for the upcoming Olympics. He posted on Instagram, all is well, and if I made people smile, all the better. Here's a Sully side up for you. A dog missing for almost a year, turning up safely more than 2,000 miles away. Mishka, the terrier, went missing in July from California and was just found in Michigan. She has since been reunited with her owners. Cute pooch, but we're out of time. Coming up, the solar eclipse is a once-in-a-blue-moon event, so to speak, and so are the travel prices to view it from the path of the totality. They're out of this world, and the numbers are ahead.
The watch list is all about Krispy Kreme donuts, and get them while they're hot. Piper Sandler says it is not, though, just the donuts that may make this stock hot. In a note today, the firm upgraded Krispy Kreme to overweight, raised the target to $20. Piper says the recent expansion of Krispy Kreme's deal with McDonald's is a, quote, game changer for the donut maker. Krispy Kreme popped today up more than 7%. It's now up 19% in a month. And this is something we'll call random but tasty. Krispy Kreme, look at that, unveiling a eclipse-themed donut with an Oreo in the middle. Get it? You can order that for a limited time only until Monday, because that's how eclipses and apparently donuts work. Well, speaking of the solar eclipse, we mentioned yesterday just how booked many short-term rentals are in cities all along the path of what they call the totality. Prices for flights and hotels in some of those cities are surging as well. So we did our very own, very unofficial, very quick, like sitting at the desk, yell at the intern type stuff. If you wanted to book a round-trip flight right now, leaving tomorrow and returning after the eclipse on Tuesday, a nonstop JetBlue flight from JFK to San Antonio, we're going to see it in full, it's going for $1,088. An American Airlines flight from LaGuardia to Little Rock, Arkansas, those same days, that's got to stop in Chicago, $1,542 with a stop, and a nonstop Delta flight from LaGuardia to Indiana over $1,600. Folks, those are coach. Hotels, not any better. A Hilton Garden Inn in Bloomington, Indiana wants $608 a night. A Sheraton in Niagara Falls, $548 a night. A Hyatt in Buffalo, $500 a night. Let's bring in the points guy, managing editor Clint Henderson on this as well. And by the way, Clint, I understand you've got better examples. Those numbers may seem small. Apparently, there's like Holiday Inns near Buffalo that want over $1,000 a night.
It's pretty wild. My favorite is the Hyatt Place in Niagara Falls. I've been monitoring it basically for a year now. They want $1,100. It was sold out most of the year. Now they do have availability for $1,100 a night. But you cannot use your points on those hotels. So, yeah, lots of examples of that kind of pricing out there.
Okay, that's the first off, if people want to pay it, let them pay it. I get that. Fine.
It's once in,
I think the next one's in 20 years. So do it. But how do hotels get away with that stuff? Because airlines are starting to do it as well. I'll go to upgrade a flight or try to pay for a hotel, and I'm getting blocked out sometimes with the points, and I'm not going to lie, it ticks me off.
Me too. Yeah.
Makes me think I don't want to do the points game.
Right. But then you find that once in a while, that great deal too. So it's a balancing act. And right, anytime there's huge demand, like there is right now for the eclipse viewing, of course, prices are going to jump drastically, especially for flights. If you're booking last minute, that's normal for flights to go crazy. And there are still a few deals out there. There's a United flight from Chicago to Dallas for under 300. There's a Delta flight, Detroit to Westchester for 300. So you can find deals, but you're right. You're absolutely right. They're making it harder and harder to use points in really high value cash instances. And they're getting really smart about, you know, matching the price of cash to the price of points. So absolutely, you're onto something here.
Yeah, it's annoying. Quickly, how do we save money if we want to enjoy the eclipse?
So there is still points availability at some hotels. Go to secondary cities and try to find those flights that they're still available. There is some good prices. We have all you need to know at the points guy. So there are flights out there you can find deals on as low as 10,000 United points. Mm-hmm. So out there, you just got to really look for them right now.
Clint, great stuff. Big numbers here, too. Clint, thank you.
See you.
Dancing Queen, Gimme, 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 and Mamma Mia. All famous songs from who else but ABBA. But 50 years ago this weekend, this song put the band on the map. Where are my roller skates and headband? That was ABBA performing, Waterloo, at the 1974 Eurovision contest. They won, quickly became global superstars. ABBA, one of the best-selling bands of all time. They reportedly earned more than $2 billion. I guess
the living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.